Hi, I'm Allison Hess.
And I'm Stephanie Graham.
Welcome to the Thousand Islands Playhouse Podcast. We have seven amazing shows to dive into for our 2026 season.
Join us as we talk to the artists that will make this season shine and get a behind-the-scenes peek at what's happening this summer, Dockside.
Don't forget to tune in
to give your ears a front row seat.
See you at the theater!
Welcome back to the 2026 season of the Playhouse Podcast. We're recording today on the ancestral lands of the Haudenosaunee and Anishinaabeg peoples, and we are recording on-site at our fabulous production facility. My name is Allison Hess, and I am the Education and Engagement Manager.
And I am Stephanie Graham, and I'm the Artistic Associate here at the Playhouse. For our fifth episode of the 2026 season of the Playhouse Podcast, we are talking about a mystery that is one part Agatha Christie, one part Mel Brooks, and all fun. Murder at Ackerton Manor. There's trouble at Ackerton Manor. On a stormy night, the loathsome Roger Ackerton meets an untimely end, leaving behind a body, a missing diamond, and a house full of suspects with more secrets than sense. Enter the ever-dramatic detective Pierre Perrault, who must untangle the lies before the killer strikes again. Murder at Ackerton Manor is a fun-loving spoof of Agatha Christie murder mysteries, where plot twists and mistaken identities make for a ruckus night in the English countryside.
And we are so lucky to have in studio writer and director of Murder at Ackerton Manor, Stephen Gallagher.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming to chat with us.
I'm so happy to be here.
Yeah. So, Stephen, our audiences would have seen you previously as an actor in Amelia, The Girl Who Wants to Fly in 2012. As a director, recent credits include Fully Committed at Theatre Aquarius, Pinkerton Comes to Prospect at Lighthouse Festival Theatre, and Murder at Ackerton Manor at Tweed & Company and Lighthouse Festival Theatre. As a writer, your play Deadly Memories just had its world premiere at Port Stanley Festival Theatre, and some other projects include plays Stealing Sam and Memorial, and musicals Blackout with Anton Lipovsky and Pollyanna with Linda Barnett. And we haven't even touched on your recent acting roles in Come From Away at the Grand Theatre in London and Frozen the Musical and Murder on the Orient Express at Theatre Aquarius. Wow, that's like three full careers that you're just doing concurrently. That's amazing.
It's a busy time right now and I'm very grateful for it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Stephen, you started your career as a performer. So when did you add writing and directing to your toolbox? And was there a moment or an experience that pushed you to expand your craft in these ways?
Yeah, I think my writing career started a little bit before my directing career did in around 2006, 20 years ago, when I was turning 41 or 42, I decided to start writing about something that happened to me in my own life. I was 33 when I was diagnosed with cancer, and it was quite a long process, and I wanted to write about that experience of someone who has cancer and how they come through with it. And so I wrote a play that was in the Fringe Festival in 2009, and it was called, worst title ever, Crap Liquor. And I wrote about a gay guy who is afraid to come out to his family. He finds out he has cancer, and the cancer makes him realize if he doesn't tell his family he's gay, they may never know who he really is. So that's what that play was about. And Mary Frances Moore, the artistic director of Theatre Aquarius, now directed it. A lot of great people in it. And that sort of got the ball rolling, and it was very well received at the Fringe Festival. And then I started writing other stuff about experiences in my own life, expanding into fiction. And some people started taking notice of that. A musical stage in Toronto specifically started to ask me to come in and become a collaborator with songwriters. And so I started writing musicals with them. And then I just started, more and more writing happened. And then a great friend of mine, Matt Murray, who's a wonderful writer, asked me to direct one of his shows at the Fringe Festival about 12 years ago.
Is that Myth of the Ostrich?
Myth of the Ostrich, that's exactly right. And because of that, I started directing more and more at Sheridan College. And so it started steamrolling from there. And now most of my career is taken up with writing projects. I have a lot of commissions going on and a lot of writing projects. And the directing stuff has sort of taken off in the last 5 or 6 years as well, which has been really interesting. I've been in the business for over 35 years as a performer mostly, but it's been great to see, as Stephanie knows too, Stephanie and I have known each other for many, many years. How do you stay in this business and stay relevant? And that means not waiting for things to happen to you and making your own things happen for yourself. Mm. And I feel that you're a great example of that as well. So I feel like we've taken the ball, or the bull by the horns rather, and kicked the ball around, but taken the bull by the horns and really made things happen for ourselves.
Yeah, I think you have to in Canada. You mm-hmm. know, you can't, it's hard to do just one thing and make a life and make a career in the arts. Mm-hmm. You have to be really multifaceted and, mm-hmm. and do a lot of things.
And not everybody, like some people are completely happy to be actors their whole life. And I love that for them. But for me, I found that when I opened that door of like another part of me that I think was always hiding, and I opened that door and said, oh, wait a minute, this is actually, I'm actually more interested in this than I thought I was. And this is actually holds more creativity for me than just acting did.
So tell us a bit about your process as a writer, from idea to finally seeing it on stage. What is the process like for you?
Well, for me, it depends on what is really inspiring to me. So a lot of the projects that I write for musicals, like some of the commissions, it was like, can you write a version of this, which is great. But other things that are inspiring to me, I like to talk about modern life and connections in modern life. So that's what I've been writing about a lot. Murder at Actors Manor is a complete departure for me. I grew up in a very small town in the Eastern Townships in Quebec called North Hatley. It had a very small theater called the Piggery. And my mom loved Agatha Christie. She brought me to this Piggery theater. It was my first experience as a theater goer. And what I saw there was murder mysteries and funny comedies. And that was my first exposure to theater. And so in the pandemic, I was trying to think of what to write. I had a bunch of other projects that were quite serious stuff. And I thought, I just don't want to do that right now. And so I thought about my mom, and I thought she had recently passed away. And I thought, well, what would she like to see? And so this play is an homage to her and my first experiences at theater. And coming out of the pandemic, I thought, well, we've all been sitting in front of our televisions watching Netflix for like 2.5 years. What can I write that will get people away from the televisions and just make them understand that going to theater can just be a good, fun night out, which mm-hmm. is, you know, all theater, hopefully. But I wanted to like really be like sort of a little bit of a gateway piece for people to come back out again. It's a 2-hour show. It's not a long show. Go for dinner, come see a show, laugh. So that's how my process for this particular show was. Other ones are I sit and I pull my hair out and I try to figure out, oh, what am I trying to say with this, or why can't I come up with any ideas? Murder at Actors Manor is the fastest play I've ever written. I wrote it in less than 2 months.
Okay. Wow.
I know. It was even sort of finished. I pitched it to a theater company, Tweed. And so I rewrote it in rehearsals. And then rewrote it again in Lighthouse. So the version we have at Gananoque at Thousand Islands Playhouse is sort of the version that I'm so pleased that I've been working on for a couple of years, but it came out of me so quickly. Like I did a lot of research. I usually do a lot of research for my plays anyway, but this one was fun research because I was stuck inside watching Poirot, Agatha Christie mysteries, everything I could get my hands on, all the tropes that we see in these mysteries are in this piece. So that was fun. How this process was. Yeah, it was crazy. It was not what I expected at all, because for so many years I've been writing about, like, you know, really lonely people trying to find connection in the modern world. And then all of a sudden I come up with this like Mel Brooks, Agatha Christie mashup. It was insane. I don't know how that happened, but it was really fun to do. And it's also my most successful play too, which is crazy. It had 6 productions this year, which is bonkers. But this is the one that's going to be the one here.
Of course it is. Mm. Well, I think it's one of the bigger productions you've had.
It absolutely is. I mean, it's definitely, in terms of like also just the size of the audiences, but also my amazing pal and set designer, Brandon Kleiman, has gone bonkers. Like, I want people to walk in and say, I know exactly where I am. I'm in English country manor. The walls are like 15 feet high.
Oh, wow.
Like, it's going to be gorgeous. It's insane. Thank goodness we have a really tall man playing the villain in the show, because he's the only person who can reach into certain places on the set.
Obviously, you've just touched on that you write plays and musicals. Uh-huh. Can you talk about a little bit the difference in writing those?
Yeah, it's funny because when you're as entrenched in musical theater as I was for so many years as a musical theater actor, you really know how things are supposed to happen in a musical. So for instance, there are certain rules. You can break the rules, but for a musical to be like a standard successful musical, you must have certain milestones or guideposts through the show for the audience to be on board, because mm-hmm. people are singing out of nowhere. And so it's much more of a math problem in musicals. Like, you write an opening number first, which will never be the opening number that opens the show. It just won't be, because after you write the musical, you realize you have to do a lot more things in the opening than you thought you did. Also, you have to allow the songs to carry the emotional weight of the piece. Whereas in a play, those are monologues or big dramatic scenes. But in a musical, as a book writer for myself, I can write the most amazing scene or monologue, and I have to understand that it will be taken over by my composer, lyricist, to create something that is better. and more fitting for the musical. So you have to give away a lot more as a book writer in a musical to the song and know that it was your idea, be fine with it, and also know that that's how collaboration works. In a play, there's still lots of collaborators in a play, but it's a different process. You're more solitary, I think. Musicals are much more of a collaborative art form. You're in the room with your composer, you're in the room with dramaturgs, and they're all the time giving you thoughts about what you can do in the musical to make it sing. Whereas in a play, you usually get through the whole first draft on your own and say, what do you think, to somebody, as opposed to, like, we have our first act done. Where does the second act go? Whereas in a play, you know where the whole thing goes. Usually you write the whole thing. So those are kind of different things. It's a different art form. I love both of them immensely, and I feel very lucky that my experience as a musical theater performer has informed how I write musicals. I love following form, and then what can I break apart?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And to build on that, you know, you say your experience as a performer has affected the way that you write musicals, but when you talk about comedy and the rhythm and the beats of comedy, have you found that that's been helpful as well? Whether it's dialogue or like physical comedy in a comedy, does the music theater background help with that?
It absolutely does. When I was working at Sheridan, I was working with a lot of younger actors who don't always have the tool set to actually create a physicality sometimes. And I love physicality in comedy. And so I realized that my own experience as an actor who loves physical comedy has really helped me, especially in this show, physical comedy. Like, I'm up on the stage with the actors every day. We're working through things together. And so it definitely has informed how I approach, how I direct, how I talk to actors and what I'm looking for. I don't give line readings, but I will say, can we try this on this beat with the hand sort of thing? And that's funnier than this beat with the hand, is that kind of thing. And so we're always workshopping bits and physical things in this particular rehearsal process.
Well, and it's literally choreography.
Well, that's the thing, because this show is the most choreographed play I've ever written. There are, I think, over 250 sound cues in the show. And the show, it runs at a very specific timing, too, because you can't rush. Like, you have to wait for the sound cue to happen, then you can speak. And you have to do a certain motion on the sound cue for the next sound cue to happen. And that's a lot more than, like, just straight play actors are used to doing. They're like, I have to what? I have to wait for the music to start? It's like, welcome to my world of the last 35 years, right? It's very interesting. It's very, but they all love it. They all love it. And everybody in this room, all three actors, Ashley Botting, Chris Bowman, and Aaron Ryder, they all love the math of comedy and physical comedy. And they're all like, their brains were exhausted the other day. We ended up five today because we're all so tired. But they're all like, how do we make this work? It's like a big stew pot, and we're all like trying to figure it out together. And it's been just a joy. Like, we cannot stop laughing in rehearsal hall. It's been really fun.
I cannot wait.
I'm so ridiculous. Excited.
But speaking of directing, you directed it at Tweed in the world premiere and then at Lighthouse. What is it about you wanted to direct it again? What is it?
Well, to be honest with you, it was being at Thousand Islands Playhouse. I had a great time when I was an actor. I've seen a lot of shows here. And I directed a show called SpongeBob the Musical at St. Lawrence College a couple of years ago. And Brett's team here, the production team, were the people I worked with. So I fell in love with the team here as well. Like, I know Shelby and I know Jane from Costa. So I knew all these people because they were designing the show for me. And so I really knew that I wanted to work here because I wanted to work with the people. I love what everybody's done with the programming here at Thousand Islands Playhouse. I wanted to be part of a season here, and I do love the show, and I wanted another crack at it because I've seen it a couple of times now, versions that I haven't directed, and I thought, oh, that's cool. I'm working with a composer on the show this time for the first time. I've always done my own sound cues for the entire show. I'm working with Matty Bautista, who's a wonderful composer and sound designer, who has other potential ideas, which we are working with. We just get the cue lab and there are sounds in that I've never heard before. And we're trying to figure that out in the room, which has been great. So it sort of cracks you open a bit as a director, especially when you're the writer of the piece. It lets you be a little more free and not say it has to be this way. It doesn't have to be any way. And that was great about seeing the show and then coming back to it. It's like, I want to do this great production, A Thousand Islands, because I haven't directed for 2 years. That's exciting to me in a different way. So that's why I want to come back to this particular show, because I'm here. And also the support you get as a creative person in this building just blows my mind.
Yeah, it's a fantastic team here.
It's a great team. And we had a production meeting today and everybody's so enthusiastic about the show. Like, you can't fake enthusiasm, right? I know that I'm coming in towards the end of the season here. So I know how hard everybody on your team has been working for the last 6 months on everything. There are so many shows coming in here. There's two spaces being run and these shows are not little shows. And you have a reputation of very high quality set design, sound design, everything. So I know what has come before me this season already. And to come in to see everybody still going full at it kind of blows my mind. And so I want to like have the show ready for that part of the team as well. So my goal is to get the show running like clockwork in the rehearsal hall. So when we get to tech, we can honor the work that the people in tech have done and we can figure out problems together. If there's any like costumes, there's a lot of costume changes in the show. There's a lot of crazy set design things in the show that we have to work on. And I want to make sure that we give that team the time in tech as well. We're ready for them. We're ready for that next step. We want to be prepared so we can embrace their contribution, which has been great already.
So as the playwright of this play that you're now directing, I notice in some of the notes, there's been some line changes and some changes. Like, do you find when you direct a play that you've written that you're always tweaking it?
Always tweaking.
Yeah.
I feel like, I think I probably read that Stephen Sondheim said it's never done. Right. And I mean, I'm actually thinking about putting some of the changes we're doing in this into like the draft that goes out to other folks, because it's just hearing it a different way. That's why when you go into a new process as a director of your own show, I know that there are certain places that they have to be for lighting. How they get there may be different, but I know they have to be there. We just did another change today. I said, oh, wait, this doesn't, we don't need to have this here. We can cut something or let's change this line because it works better for you. Like one of the actors made a mistake the other day. I said, that's way better than what I wrote. That's in the script. So you're not getting any credit for it. No royalties, but that's way better. And it also encourages actors to not to make mistakes on purpose or not to change the lines, to make zanier choices. And because they know that you're not going to say, that's not the right line. I don't
exactly.
do that.
Exactly. Because it's quite unnerving for a performer to be in the room with the writer.
Yeah.
You know, and oh gosh, I made a mistake. And that's their words. And, you know, but that's freeing. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I think it works out really well. And the thing is, I mean, yes. And there are certain ones like, because it is it's a murder mystery. Besides being a comedy, it's a murder mystery. And it's a true murder mystery. So there are clues laid in all the way through the first act. And so one of the things I will often say to the actors, I'll say, so great. The line is this, and it must be said at this pace. Because if they need to hear it, and like, does something go off in their brain that's a clue? Because there are clues all through the show, in the first act especially.
Okay, audience, pay attention.
Audience, pay attention, yeah. So they're pretty well laid out. But like, there's certain things that nobody would ever guess. But if they came back a second time, they say, oh my God, they said that. And that's who the killer is. So for me as a writer, I don't mind putting changes in. And I've always been that way. For the world premiere I just had recently, I was doing the same thing. I watched the first two previews, couldn't put any more changes in for them, but went home and put changes in the first act. So I love it. It makes me feel more creative because writing is hard. Rewriting is what I love. Writing is hard because you're trying to create something and you're like, am I sitting in my own, you know, my kitchen by myself all day? Like, how do I do this? Should I clean the toilet instead? The dog needs to be walked. I should make dinner. And then all of a sudden 8 hours is gone and you haven't done anything. Right. So I love rewriting things and making sure they're more to what I want. So it's been fun.
When you are directing a play that you haven't written, I'm assuming you approach the material a little differently. How is it different? I guess you're not making changes to the script as you go, probably quite as much when you're directing a play you haven't written.
It depends, you know, like for the plays that are already written, no changes, but I've done a lot of premiere plays. Mm. So I've like a lot of plays, like with Matt Murray, I've directed two of his two premieres of his shows. And that's been really interesting because I love having the writer in the room. Not all directors like that. I like it for premieres because I also feel like a premiere should be as close to what the writer has in his head as possible. Then they can do something else with it 20 years down the line. You know, Ivo van Hove can do whatever he wants to with it, which is fine. But for the premiere, I feel like we should take into account what they're trying to write. So I like having the writers in the room. I directed like another world premiere last year. The writer was not in the room. So we would do changes in the room, like I would be dramaturging it on the fly, sending him thoughts at night, and he'd usually agree. And if he didn't, we'd talk through it. But I would do that like every night. It was like for 2 hours after the show, I'd send him thoughts about what happened during that day and why we thought we should maybe make these shifts. And that's always great. But for plays that are existing, if we run up against something, it's a stop moment where we say, okay, why is it written this way? He didn't change it, or she didn't change it, or they didn't change it. What does that mean? So let's really take like 10 minutes and figure out what this means, as opposed to poo-pooing it and saying, that's a stupid line. Let's make it work in our version. Like, it doesn't make sense to us right now, but it makes sense to the writer. So how can we get in their brain and make it make sense? That's what I like to do. Put on my writer's cap in the directing room with the actor and saying, okay, so we're having trouble with this section. You're not remembering the lines, for instance. Why do you think that is? What are we trying to say with this? Maybe our intention is not right. Maybe we have to change our intention. Maybe we have to change our physicality. Maybe we have to rethink about what this scene is about. Usually we don't remember lines because it doesn't make sense to us. You know, we're not sure what's going on in there. So if that's happening, then we just take a break and sit down and talk about the writing that's confusing us. Because if it's in the play, it means something, right? So that's how I approach it. When you run into problems, talk it through.
So you said it's been pretty exhausting for the actors because this is full out. There's only three of them.
Exactly.
But you've been having a good time. It seems like it'd be a fun show to put together. What specifically about your cast are you excited about?
Well, what's great about all three of them is I did not know Chris Bowman at all. He has been at the Shaw Festival for many years, and it's been great to have him in the room because he's not just a wonderful actor, but he's also an improv guy, and he's very physical, and he's, you know, 6'4". Nothing funnier to me than watching a handsome fella who's 6'4" act like an idiot. So he's been great. He's not shy about being dumb on stage at all. And he plays two very different characters. Ashley Bodding, who plays Ariadne and other characters and Basil, is a pal of mine. I've directed a world premiere of her musical. She writes for This Hour Has 22 Minutes. And she's also a funny Second City person. So to have her take on funny is, and she's great at accents. So she's been great to have in the room, just having fun. And Aaron Ryder, who was here last year, I've known from Sheridan for many years, and I've always wanted to work with this kid. He is going to blow people's minds in these roles that he plays. But all of them are just also just really game to do anything. And that's the goal. Like, I think when I'm casting a show, what I like to do is talk to the person who runs the theater, an artistic director, run the names by them. And if there's ever, like, if somebody says, well, maybe not that person, I would say, no problem. Let's move on. Because I don't want people in the room who are going to hinder the process for me or anybody else in the company. Everyone needs to be like a good sport, on board, happy to be here. You know what you signed up for, and joyful in the process. But these particular three people all got the blessings of everybody, which is great. And we're on day 8 now. And if any show is very close to a Cal Burnett sketch that's going off the rails, it's this one. But it's always on the verge of lunacy, this show. And they're just doing a great job of just having a great time. And I just want those kind of people in the room, as we all do, right? We just want people who are willing to play and willing to work hard too.
Check it out. Get ready, audience.
I'm very excited. I cannot wait. It's going to be so fun. So, you've been to GAN a bunch, right? Mm-hmm. You were here in 2012. You were part of the playwrights unit.
2015,
yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. And seen lots of shows here. So have you had a chance to kind of go exploring at all in like downtown? Have you gone to any restaurants or any of the shops or anything in town?
Yeah. The last couple of days I've been going to Pistachio Cafe. I love it there. They've been so great. They have the best coffee.
Gelato.
Just really nice, friendly people in there. I also stopped by on my way from the gym, because I'm going to the gym every day in the morning, Panache, which makes the most amazing like French pastries in the morning. Like, I'm ruining my gym time by picking up pastries. So I love those two places a lot. And I also really like, I think it's Beggars and Banquets bookstore. I've been in there a bunch of times, and I'm just trying to figure out what my next purchase is when I have a little bit of spare time. I'm going to buy a book from there. Yeah, so those are the ones I've been supporting. And I just love, I went down to the dock the other day overlooking the water, and I did some work there for a little while. That was really, really nice. Yeah, it's been great just to wander around. I go running every morning. So I've been running around town and down by the water. So that's been great. It's a beautiful place. It's really stunning.
It's a stunning place. Well, thank you, Stephen, for coming to speak with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, this was really awesome. I was excited for the show already. And now I can't wait. This is going to be great. Thanks to Matt McDonald for recording the Playhouse podcast today. And a special thank you to Mark Hunt for composing the theme music for our podcast.
For more information and to book tickets, visit us at thousandislandsplayhouse.com.
See you at the theater!